This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you by Royalty, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Just kind of start, again, building up, you know, not only the league itself, which was growing, but the reputation of Mr. Mini Golf.
Right. That's when you took on the name Mr. Mini Golf?
Well, I actually took that on at the moment I started the Mini Golf Review site. So I was looking to try to find some sort of like alias to like as a character, because I'm a fan of professional wrestling too. So I wanted to build this like character that whenever I'm out doing miniature golf, that's who I am.
Like a secret identity.
You kind of can
make it fun, make it more fun, right?
You can not worry about all the things that maybe you feel insecure about as the person, as me, Carl Barth. I can be like, oh, I just own this space. So have that extra confidence and just, you know, own that. And then it leads to just more brand recognition too. Like I know that there's the theologian Carl Barth. So if you do searches on Google and things like that, that's typically the first result that shows up. That just because people have been searching for that content for decades.
So he's well known,
So it's kind of hard to compete with that. But I was looking and I found that Mr. as in M-I-S-T-E-R Mini Golf wasn't taken. So I figured that was going to be, you know, my identity.
Your online persona, basically.
Yeah. And the MR Mister was already taken, but that was over in the United Kingdom. So I felt that I had enough to not have any conflict in that distinction. So that's really where that came to be. And then today it's completely my identity with everything being full time with the mini golf.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, I'm Mr. Mini Golf. I'm a professional miniature golfer out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I created two mini golf based businesses.
All right, Carl. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. I appreciate it out in Wisconsin. So it's an hour earlier there, you said, and I know we talked off mic that things are starting to loosen up a little bit. You played some golf, but no mini golf. It's still locked down, right?
Yep. Miniature golf driving ranges are locked down through May 26th still, but golf was just opened up on Friday, so people are able to get out and about and, you know, practice safe social distancing. But it was just good to be outside and not be stuck at home for a while.
Good. All right. So we met through, I think, the podcast guest website, maybe.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
And I thought it was interesting. I didn't know that there was a professional, you know, circuit for mini golf. You even told me that putt-putt golf is a little different than other mini golf forms. So before we get in that, why don't you go a little bit about, you know, where you're from, where you grew up, you know, what your education is, because I know you made a change in your life, and then how did you then decide you wanted to do this full time and so forth?
Sure. So I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, a town called Elgin.
Okay.
And I lived there all through high school. And when I was in high school, I became really fascinated with Project Lead the Way, which is a program for basically getting into engineering and technical type of background. Okay. And I discovered Milwaukee School of Engineering in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Okay. I really wanted to go into like smart home, sustainable design with architecture.
Right.
So I enrolled in their architectural engineering program. Had my first couple trimesters there and realized that maybe this isn't the best fit for trying to do something like that. But I really like the school, the community, the environment of Milwaukee. So I found a different major that definitely appealed to my other interests, which was a degree called technical communications, okay. Which basically gave me a background in all the different engineering programs that MSOE had to offer. So I did not only the architectural engineering, but mechanical engineering, industrial engineering, software engineering, and even biomolecular engineering. Wow. So I got a nice diverse background and being able to understand how engineers work in all their different fields and get okay. an appreciation for that.
Right.
But then I also got a minor in marketing and entrepreneurship and a certificate in web design. So
I felt
I had a very diverse background, well-balanced,
right. and
which would take me to really whatever company that I would be entertained by. So
right.
I got an internship my senior year at school, which was a product documentation internship with a Fortune 500 company that okay. Produces banking software. And that was an awesome internship because I got to work on client-facing documentation for high-profile clients like the big banks of America, and then got to do usability studies. So got to work on a product and then present that to end consumers that were test subjects, also while working with the VPs and CEOs of those big bank companies. So got some great networking and experience with doing that.
Okay.
After I graduated from school, I got hired at that same company as a business systems analyst, which meant that I was working on producing the functionality of those products and apps and working on requirements for that as well.
Okay.
And then about 2.5 years later, I got hired on again as a second role as a technical writer. So I was then in charge of all those client-facing documents that I was working on basically as an intern, but I was now responsible for the start-to-finish end product of that.
So this was like documentation that taught people how to use the software?
Yeah, so yeah, it was like a product manual as well as like how can they sell the product to their end consumers, any like requirements or any like troubleshooting type of stuff was, I put that together. So
all the training guides, technical guides.
Absolutely.
Yeah, those are hard to write. They're very hard. Yeah. It looks easy. People think, but it's complicated.
Yeah. Especially when they're very complicated banking products where there's so many details that you have to go in depth into.
Right.
And I mean, you start off with like a manual that's like 800 pages, and then you have to figure out how you can shorten that up and like what do you not go into so much detail with in the initial product manual, but then you have all those other different product pieces like feature guides and things like that. So if people want to, you know, dive deeper into a particular thing,
right.
they can always go back and do that.
Yeah. Cause you don't know your average user, what their knowledge base is or their experience or anything. Yeah.
So you just gotta, you know, be able to.
They know nothing, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you gotta be able to catalog all that information and have great access to that, easy access, and be organized with that. And that was pretty cool because it was a team of just myself, so I was the lead on that, and I got to work on some pretty cool products, probably. One of them that was one of the largest products that is currently out there is a product called Zelle. And you might see commercials for that. You might see
ads at all our
Hulu.
Banks. Yeah, all our banks use it. Yep.
Yeah. So that was something that I got to work on to help implement that with other banks throughout the country.
Yeah, that's become like the Venmo standard, because Venmo is a consumer product, right? It's the standard that the banks are all using. That's at least in our area. It's PNC, Bank of America, Chase. They're all using the smaller local banks. They're all using Zelle.
Exactly, because basically, like you mentioned, Venmo, PayPal, Square Cash, those are all applications that you can use to send money to your, like, I could send money to you, you could send money to me, I could send it to you as a business, all those different options. But what was the differentiator for Zelle is it's actually a network for the bank. So it's a lot easier to know that it's secure and trusted because it's coming from your bank instead of like a third party
application. It's also, the bank's got to be comfortable with it too, right? So they know that it's a secure system. So that's interesting. So you work on Zelle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And that was a great experience for me with both pros and cons. So being the solo writer for that, it was pretty stressful because it was a large project. And, you know, I had to really figure out how to just deliver on providing that documentation. So I always kind of think, man, I got like 20 years of experience working on this project by myself, because there's all sorts of other teams of technical writers, but you know, they're all working on their own projects, and I was considered like the lowest level of employee for that field in technical writing. So I got this big project and I had to hit the ground running. So I really mastered the software and organization of doing that and providing, you know, that documentation. Okay. On the other side, it did kind of lead to me being burned out a bit, right? Because you know, it's stressful and all the work that goes with it and being organized with that. But in the meantime, while I was working on that, I had formed my first mini golf, I guess at the time, more like hobby type of thing, side hustle. And that was a website called minigolfreviews.com.
Okay.
And basically, I discovered that there was a need to provide more archival and evidence of miniature golf throughout the United States.
And you had already been like an avid miniature golfer at that point?
I'd been playing mini golf my whole life. Okay. One of my first memories that I can remember is either I was 2 or 3 years old and I got a gift of this thing called gator golf. So it was this little plastic gator that you hit golf balls into and then it would shoot them back at you. So I even have some a photo of that. So that's like my earliest memory in life is playing gator golf.
That's funny.
And then as growing up, every time the family would do an activity, if I got to choose, it was always mini golf. And it got to the point where every time I chose, they my siblings would be like, "Oh, we're playing mini golf again. We just did this last time you picked." So that was great for me. And the thing that I really loved about mini golf was that it doesn't matter your age or your demographic or anything like that.
Right.
You can play and have a good time. And every single course and hole is unique, even if they have similarities in structure. It's unique to that location. Whether maybe it's just a straight down the line putt, but there could be features, theming around the course that makes it unique to that individual instance. So fast forwarding then to 2017, when I founded Mini Golf Reviews, I was traveling around and I was like, man, I really want to play some of these courses. And it was easy to find the ones that had, you know, the Google reviews and Google My Business and things like that. But there's a ton of courses that are either unlisted just because maybe the owner or the business itself doesn't.
Just a local small business,
They're not online even at all. So really, how do you find those courses? Is just the word of mouth of talking with locals, or maybe there's some brochures or pamphlets at like a tourist stop or whatever, whatever, you know, how you find it. But sometimes those courses that are the hidden gems of mini golf are some of the best courses that you can play, just because they didn't use a contractor and have like a cookie cutter-esque design where it's very similar to other courses.
More custom.
They might have, yeah, they might have made that entirely by hand themselves. So
yeah,
it's got their own unique flavor to it. So having not been able to find some of these courses, and then unfortunately with courses closing, there might not be any evidence that that course ever existed. So
you not only review, but you're kind of almost like archiving the history of these courses before they disappear.
Yeah, exactly. Because one of my favorite courses growing up was this indoor course called the Four Seasons. And it was themed around different landmarks around the U.S. So like they had a Mount Rushmore, they had the redwood trees, they had a riverboat and all sorts of cool things like that. And the problem was, after they had closed in the mid-2000s, I was trying to find pictures of it because I was like, this was my favorite course growing up. So I wanted to see, like, to have that memory of it, and I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, because that early on, people probably weren't uploading all the kind of photos that...
Right, for reviews.
Yeah, now like with social Yelp media, you end up on there because people who play the course taking photos and selfies.
Yeah,
and
things. Exactly. So it was just so unique, and I've yet to find something as unique as that course today. And it just kind of, like, the only thing I can do is remember what those holes are like from having played it. But again, I was a child. I think the last time I was able to play, I was probably about 10 years old.
Right.
So I have to just rely on those memories. And
so to this day, you haven't found any photographs of that course?
Yeah, nothing yet. I mean, I think the original owner had passed away, and that's how it ended up shutting down.
Right.
I mean, I suppose maybe the family might have some photos or things like that, but it's hard to, you know, find that information as well. I mean, they had probably one of the most bizarre mini golf holes that I've ever played, which was it was called Yellowstone, so for Yellowstone National Park, and they had this taxidermied buffalo, right? So it's just sitting on the hole, but
a full-size buffalo.
Yeah. And as weird as that is, someone decided that either it was a good idea or just an idea that they would put a motor in the butt of the buffalo so the tail could wag back and forth over the hole.
That's
so
funny.
Like, it's just so strange and bizarre. But
so you're putting like underneath the buffalo and the tail would get in the way?
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
It was fantastic. It was just so bizarre.
That's funny.
And that was something I loved about it. So I haven't.
So what
really
was the name of the course again, Carl?
It was called the Four Seasons.
Okay, and do you know the name of the family that used to own it?
Nope, I couldn't find any listing information.
And where was it located?
So it was in what suburb? It was in Illinois. I'll have to look up the suburb again. But that actually,
because if anybody's listening, I have like 30 listeners. So if anybody's listening and they can figure it out and do some research, Carl's looking for pictures of this thing.
Yeah,
so
I'd love it. I'd love it. The location now is a bank, so maybe I can figure out by, you know, connecting with the bank and seeing if they have information on the prior owner. Maybe that's a way to go about it, but how far back they would be willing to go on that, who knows, right?
So, well, what you should do, this might work, I'm not sure, but if you look up tax records, property tax records in that area, and you can find the block and lot number of the property, because that doesn't change. Then you can do a search for prior deed owners, and it'll show the deed owners.
Oh,
and it's possible that the family owned the property, or, you know, they rented it from somebody in that time. Yeah. You can find that person who rented it and then make some connection. I mean, it would take some investigative journalism there.
This is going to be the greatest mystery solved with miniature golf. That's for sure.
Yeah,
for
there you go. And you still do. You were telling me you still do mini golf reviews. That's still part of your business, right?
Yeah. So that's current today. So, you know, as I was working on building up that brand, you know, found that need of, you know, we need an archival, site for miniature golf, and then, you know, reviewing courses so you can know, hey, this is the best course to play in that particular area. I was writing the full course review. So I was doing, you know, whether they had 18 holes, 9, 27, what have you. I was writing that full article, and I was realizing very early on that, one, that took a long time to produce, and the audience for something like that was just, it was so minimal, because I personally love mini golf to the point where I'll read as much as I can about it, but there's not too many other people that are probably willing to read a 5,000 word article on miniature, right, on a particular miniature golf course. So I still was getting some viewership just because it was so unique, and it was cool because I started that in October of 2017, and going to the end of the year, I had a viewership of people reading views about 10,000 views. So I thought that was pretty cool, just because, you know, with anything, it doesn't matter if it's miniature golf or any type of business, if people can spend any amount of time looking at your stuff, I mean, you're reaching people, because there's so much content out there nowadays. Like, just, I think there was a study that said that every single day now in the course of history produces more content than like the past 100 years or something.
Yeah, I'm sure, because we're just like loading up on content. Everybody's got something to say. They find stuff, exactly. They load it up. And then people loading up old stuff. I get tagged on photos from 30 years ago because people find it and then get it loaded up. Yeah.
So the fact that if you can get someone to look at your content opposed to all the other content out there, you know, says something about what you're doing if people find it interesting. So then you just have to keep working on improving and providing the best that you can for those viewers. So realizing that, you know, it was just so much content for people to read at one time, I kind of changed my approach on it, and I decided, oh, I'll just post a new miniature golf hole every day. So it's just a short little, what I call a micro post, because now it's only 150 to 300 words at most,
which people can digest very easily. Right.
Yeah. Look at the pictures, and then, you know, maybe they spend just a few moments on it just because that's what they have time to for entertainment or whatever throughout the day. But then also it's very like catchy to like, or grabby to get someone to click on, well, what's the prior hole look like? And then the next one and the next one and the next one. And then they kind of go down this like rabbit hole of exploring all sorts of different mini golf holes and different courses and different themes. And I mean, I have an archive myself of around like 10,000 images, and I've probably...
These are all courses you visited or reviewed online?
Yep. All courses that I personally have visited. I might start opening it up to additional people being able to post on there up at the point where I've gotten to date with it. And I've been thinking about that. But so then for 2018, for the whole year, I did see some growth, and that got to about 50,000 views on the website. And so I was like, okay, we're moving forward, we're getting some growth. But and I was still pretty impressed about that, because at this point it was still, you know, more of a hobby type of thing.
Right.
And then 2019 was what was the year that I was moving up to leaving working in the corporate world, and had developed some other ways to allow me to pursue a mini golf career full time. And I'll get to that shortly. But basically 2019, having worked full time with the mini golf stuff, I actually brought it from 50,000 views up to over 3 million. And it was just crazy. Like I couldn't really believe that, you know, people are getting that interested, but I was working on trying to reach more people using social media, and people, you know, were finding it, especially a lot of golfers, mini golfers on Instagram that had influence and once those types of people start finding it and liking it, then it starts reaching out to their audience, and then their audience.
You're gaining traction, basically.
Right, exactly. So, and it was all, you know, organic growth. So I wasn't paying for ads or anything like that, which is fantastic, because I can reach so many people even just on that.
Plus, at that point, you can start to monetize, because when you have that many followers.
Yep, exactly. So
now, you at that point, this is like 17, 18, were you already playing in tournaments?
I started playing in tournaments in 2018.
Okay.
I found a league that apparently was going on in Milwaukee that was in its 14th year.
Right.
And I won that my year joining that. So that was really cool. So that one was a traveling league. So you travel to all different courses in the area, and each week was a different course. And then,
you're traveling within driving distance.
Yeah. It was like a 50-mile radius of Milwaukee.
Right. That makes sense. Sure.
So did that, and it was just cumulative lowest score. So, just every week, you know, playing these different courses and discovering those. And then it was great because I could also then go through and do my reviews of those courses too. So it's kind of a double whammy.
Oh, so these are like all new courses you hadn't played at yet?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd played courses. I'd played a lot of courses, and there's a lot of courses that if they're still open, I have to get back to from playing as a kid growing up.
Right.
I wasn't doing the reviews and taking the pictures and all of that.
Right.
But yeah, it was great because I was kind of double dipping on what I was doing. I was playing in the league, which was a lot of fun, but then I was also able to get pictures and get that, you know, archival evidence as well.
Right.
But yeah, I'd won that league in my first year. And then talking with the guy that was running it, he wanted to explore some other things. So I took it over for the 15th year. So I was running
the league.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was great. I was able to get some news coverage, get on the local news for that. And just kind of start, again, building up, you know, not only the league itself, which was growing, but the reputation of Mr. Mini Golf.
Right. That's when you took on the name Mr. Mini Golf.
I actually took that on at the moment I started the Mini Golf Review site. So I was looking to try to find some sort of like alias to like as a character, because I'm a fan of professional wrestling too. So I wanted to build this like character that whenever I'm out doing miniature golf, that's who I am.
Like a secret identity.
You kind of can
make it fun. You know, make it more fun, right?
Yeah. You can not worry about all the things that maybe you feel insecure about as the person, as me, Carl Barth. I can be like, oh, I just own this space. So have that extra confidence and just, you know, own that. And then it leads to just more brand recognition too. Like I know that there's the theologian Carl Barth. So if you do searches on Google and things like that, that's typically the first result that shows up.
Right.
That just because people have been searching for that content for decades. So
he's well known. Right.
Right. So it's kind of hard to compete with that. But I was looking and I found that Mr. as in M-I-S-T-E-R Mini Golf wasn't taken. So I figured that was going to be, you know, my identity.
Your online persona, basically.
Yeah. And the MR Mister was already taken, but that was over in the United Kingdom. So I felt that I had enough to not have any conflict in that distinction. So, so that's really where that came to be. And then today it's completely my identity with everything being full time with the mini golf. But then, so back to Mini Golf Reviews and building up that reputation. You know, I was reaching out to people and I actually got sponsored. So a couple companies decided that they wanted to provide some sponsorship, both with product and with, you know, being paid to promote and everything. So my
main site, you mean, like advertisers on the site?
Yep. And for just me playing mini golf around the country.
Oh, okay. So, sponsoring you too. Okay.
Yeah. So my number one sponsor is a company called Knight Sports USA. So what they do is they produce golf balls that actually light up. And not only do they light up, you can actually change the color of the golf ball that's lit up. So you can play they initially, you know, did this for regular golf so people could play like twilight to night golf. But they had discovered after talking with me the market of mini golf. So I was like, oh, this is a great product. It changes the industry. Every time that I was going to different courses, I had a couple of those. So I'd play and people were like, oh, that is the coolest thing.
Right.
And after a while and them seeing my site and posting the content and everything, they realized that I'm the industry expert on this. So they actually, you know, have me as a consultant. So when I travel to these courses around the country, I can present not only the golf balls, but also flags to go in the cup so that light up too. So you can have a full night golf experience at your miniature golf course. And that was a way for, you know, these courses to have additional revenue come in because, they could stay open a little bit later. They could have special.
If they don't have lighting for a night golf, right? Yeah.
And they could have special events like Friday night glow night or whatever.
Yeah, that's fun.
Similar to like how cosmic bowling became a thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it also appeals to a younger demographic, but not saying that you can't at any age group, but it appeals to the younger demographic. So it gets kids to want to go out and play more. And
mini golf kind of lends itself to that. What's that golf company? I don't know if it's a franchise or a chain. The ones that they, it's like glow in the dark indoor golf.
Yeah. So that's like called like Blacklit Golf.
Yeah,
there's all sorts.
What's the big company? I see them. Monster Mini Golf.
Yeah, Monster Mini Golf is all over the U.S. So they have a great theming too, because it's a little spooky and
and
a great theming throughout. They're definitely one of the better designed courses too for Blacklit Golf. The only thing with Blacklit Golf that's typically an issue is it lacks elevation because it's indoors.
Right.
People haven't really built too many elevation changes.
Yeah.
So that's really the only like downfall of that is it's just, it lacks like that sloping and elevation character that you get from going to the outdoor courses that you might be traveling up three stories high,
right,
up a mountain through caves.
Yeah, they can build all that.
Right.
So that's
kind of like the only downfall really with those Blacklit courses. But having the light up golf balls opposed to regular golf balls with like a luminescent paint, I mean, it makes it even more fun. So those are actually one of the better customers for it. But still, like playing the night golf is a really cool experience, because even if you've played a course dozens of times, when you go out there and play the night golf, it's a different experience. You might not be able to figure out where that angle or the certain brick you have to hit because it's dark. You just kind of have to play it differently. So it changes how you play the game, which makes, you know, brings that other like replay value back, because now you're playing a completely different experience.
Right. It's interesting. So I don't know. Yeah. I was wondering that, because if you go late and it starts getting dark, yeah, of course it doesn't have lights. You run into problems. You can't see anything anymore.
Right. And even too with it too is that they can, you know, do an additional upcharge for that too. So, you know, they can charge a bit more to have that special experience, just like with cosmic bowling, you pay a little bit more, but you know, you have, it's a different experience than what you would normally do.
Right.
So then, working with that and becoming sponsored is great. So, you know, I was able to monetize the website and the company. Okay. So, you know, being able to fund the cost of operation of that, and then, you know, making something as well, which kind of led to like, okay, I can do that. But how else can I supplement that so I can actually, you know, be full time in this type of industry?
And now a word from our sponsors. Royalty.com, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. Royalty. It's your marketing done. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about Royalty and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable, and most of all, help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
The ultimate dream is to own my own course that I designed, like a facility where it's miniature golf-based gaming. So like, you know, you could play like a game like Connect Four with miniature golf, or Battleship, or things like that. More competitive head-to-head social competition type stuff, but then also have a restaurant and bar scene as well, because you want, people will come for the mini golf, but typically the reason people will leave is they get hungry or they want to have something to drink and have that socialization aspect, right, besides the game. And the other issue with a course one where you have 18 holes, right? There's a definitive end to the round. So right, once you get to 18, it's done. And then, okay, it's on to the next thing. Well, if you have something more that's like kind of like a Dave and Buster's where it's like a game, but it's head to head. So I'm versing you. And the goal is, you know, we get maybe 10 balls each. You're red, I'm blue. And, you know, we have to try to see how many we can get into a certain objective or whatever right, that design is. But now it's head to head in that competition. And then, you know, you can have even rankings and scoring systems, like these places, like there's a awesome realistic laser tag place in Wisconsin called iCombat that I really love their model. So basically, you're carrying basically a real weapon. So it's heavy. It's got like air compressors into it. So every time you're shooting the laser shot at your opponent, it's making a report. So it's like, it's actually a shot going off. So not only is it not like quiet, so you can't just be like hiding in a corner and just sniping everybody out. People know where you are. You got to be moving, and it's right, really, and it's competitive. I mean, you're breaking out in a sweat. But the idea is to kind of take something along those lines and build a system where, you know, you go and play and now you're moving up the ranks and you're unlocking additional perks and merchandise and things like that that you get just for being, you know, a returning and loyal customer. But right, then also it's like when you're playing those competitions, you could be racking up points to redeem to play like my big idea is like this prize hole. So you play on this hole, and as you hit it into the hole, you're unlocking like segments to unlock big prizes, whether it's a $10,000 cash or a new car or something really like cool along those lines where you're winning something of significant value. Because, you know, if you go and play it someplace like a Dave and Buster's is particularly better than most of those gaming facilities, right, but you know, you spend $20 for all those tokens and you get something that's worth maybe $3 as a prize after at the end of the day, really. So
right,
like I want people to see that value that they can go for. And that I think would cause return customers as well. But anyway, that's like the ultimate dream. Like I want to get to that point someday.
Right.
So where I'm at now is then I also formed a business, and this is where I was able to finally make the leap from leaving the corporate world into mini golf full time. So, okay. I had my student loans prepared to be paid off. So last March is when I got that taken care of. So I got that paid off in 3 years. Okay. And so that was extremely early, but that was because I was very aggressive with paying that off. I was paying multiple times, usually 10 to 15 times the minimum payment amount,
right,
because I good, knew that, you know, that's like a debt that will carry with you forever. So yeah, so just get that taken care of, and then you have that freedom to, you know, explore other areas as well. So
right,
I got that paid off. So that was like the one thing that was really holding me back was that, because I didn't know, you know, how much I was going to be making trying to make this transition. So I wanted to have that taken care of and then give it a shot. I'm young. I'm only 27. So
right,
if it ended up not working out, you know,
go back to engineering or whatever you're doing, right?
Yeah, I built up that skill set, so I could always go back to that company or another company. I left on good terms, but I actually left a year ago yesterday, April 26th. So
no, okay.
I've been out
1 year mark. So happy anniversary.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so I've been out for a year.
There you go. And
you know, basically, what was the other component to this was I created a company called Jackpot LLC. So it's okay, a mini golf hole-in-one contest that I travel to different events, festivals.
Right.
People play for cash. So Jackpot and the tagline, where you always putt for dough. So it worked really well with the industry. It allowed me to have that creative freedom to design miniature golf holes, customize that to fit the theme of the event. But then also, it also fulfills my mission-based drive that I need too, which is, so at every event that I'm at, I donate back to a local nonprofit or other organizations throughout the United States and the world to support them, because I figured if I can support these organizations and places that are in need with something I love, miniature golf, I can just continue to grow that business, because if I can prove that I can do something with so unique and niche as miniature golf, that can motivate other people to be more generous and give back in other ways that they didn't think that they could, just be unique and creative with it.
Right. So Jackpot is, so like, for example, let's say a local chamber of commerce is having a mini golf day. They might hire you to come in to do a hole for people to win prizes, and they pay you a fee to do it, right?
Yeah, the people pay a fee. So the great part about it is I'm free to hire to actually do the event. So if a school or a church or anything wants to have me at, I'm glad to go do their event. Then people pay to play just because of how the model works, because they're playing to win money. So I start that off at typically $50. So they pay $5 to play. And then a dollar always goes into the jackpot. So it's like progressive. So jackpot, jackpot, that's where the name kind of originated from. And then it goes all the way up to $500. So, and that's just mainly because once you hit a $600 threshold as a business, you're responsible for getting tax information from people. But the thing is, if you're and people are still supposed to be responsible and report that money that they get, but at that point the business isn't responsible for reporting that, because who wants to go to an event festival, you're walking around and you play a game, you end up winning money, who wants to just give their tax information, or do they have it even available on hand to give it to the person? And that just was a logistical nightmare to try to have to worry about it. So I just eliminated that from the
equation. You're talking about the winner. So if the winner won $1,000, you'd have to get their tax info and send them tax forms.
And that's not something that the business would want to have to be responsible for, just because, again, it's just a logistical nightmare trying to reach these people. What if they give you a fake name or contact information, and then now you're in trouble? So it was just better to, avoid having that as an issue. I'd hired a lawyer to help with, getting trademark and everything with that, but then also to make sure, it was legal to operate in Wisconsin. I've looked at other states too. In some states it wouldn't be, just because of the classification, but, to avoid the classification of being considered gambling, it's actually a skills contest. So people that have that play golf or miniature golf definitely can have the better opportunity to get the hole in one to win the money.
Right.
But that doesn't mean someone that's never played before can't. They could have, just be a natural talent, but it does help produce overall what's considered skill versus
chance. But it's not like you buy a ticket and you just picking their name out of a hat.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So you're saying for $5 they buy like one putt or a series of putts or something? They get
three putts. So they get three putts for $5. That's typically the model that I do. But that's the great thing about it, is I can be completely flexible and change that. The only thing is I just have to be conscious about, one, there's money going towards a donation, and then also because that's taken out no matter what. And then also going back into the jackpot. So if I was like to do it as $1 a putt, well, how much do I take out to give to the charity for that? And then how much do I put into the jackpot at that point?
Because no, that wouldn't work at $1 a putt. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, it depends on the event. If I was doing an event that was entirely going towards the charity 100%, and then I do a donation as the prize money, basically, I could consider doing that. But that's what I love about it, is being so flexible. But the thing that's also great, and it's a great form of marketing with it, is they get three putts for $5. But if they follow Jackpot on social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they get an extra putt. And that putt is indefinitely. So it's not just that one time they do it and then that's it. They decide, they didn't make it on those four putts, and they play again. They still get that fourth putt, and they'll get that at any event that Jackpot's at. So it's like, that loyalty for being a follower. So, and that helps grow the business too. And typically people are like, when they start playing, they're like, oh, this is awesome. I definitely want that extra putt that can be the game changer of whether they win or lose. So they definitely do that. And then I've also been working with like the organizations that host events. They right. do if people do a follow for that, they'll get that extra putt as well. And same with following like the nonprofit organization that I'm working with too. So it gives, besides the monetary donation that I'm giving to those organizations, they're getting additional followers to for their mission.
Right.
So people can discover them that might normally not discover them. So it's, you know, branching out into a different audience. And
so let me ask you a technical question. Yeah, sure. How do you track all that stuff? How do you know that the person's followed you and is still following you? So now they're at another event, they're entitled to an extra putt. How do you follow right. all that?
Yeah. So that part is, it can be a logistical problem too. But the thing at the event is if someone does follow, I'll get that notification on my phone right away.
Right, so you'll know that right away, right?
Yep. And then typically, if people are followers, I actually remember them because I have that interaction with my customer base. So right. it's entirely customer service based business. That's like, I think one of the most important things that can just differentiate a business nowadays is, you know, their customer service is top notch opposed right. to, because I mean, anybody can sell any particular product nowadays. But what I think is the
there's very low barriers to entry. If I may not have the experience that you do and I couldn't do it as well, but I could go into the mini golf.
Absolutely. Money. Right.
Yeah. But so as you get thousands and thousands of followers though, how are you going to be able to keep track of all the people that are now followers of yours that are entitled sure. to an extra putt here and there, wherever they go?
Yeah. I mean, I can just ask them to show me on their phone or tell me, you know, whatever their social That's media handle point, right? is, and I can just look that up real quick.
Right.
But for the most part, I trust people. I mean, if they know about it, if they say, oh, I'm entitled to that extra putt, then they've either seen me before or, you know, have done it before. So I feel
maybe
like
now listen to the podcast.
Yeah. So there's a good opportunity then for, if they know about it, then they obviously, you know, have connected with me in some way. And that's right. really the whole point, is that they connected with me as the business. So even,
of course, you know, you can't pay for that advertising. And,
yeah, right. So even definitely. If they decide to unfollow at a later time, hey, they still came back and played again. Right. So there's that element to it too. So,
right. Sure. And I'm sorry, go ahead, Carl.
No, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was saying, so the real, the monetary aspects of your business, really the way you make your money is through Jackpot. And from advertising you get through, then support you get through the mini golf reviews. And then mm-hmm. probably the third one that you make the least amount of money on is, because there can be a lot of money in professional golf, right? I mean, how big are the purses at these events? It depends on
their ability
to raise money. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just kind of a bonus. So that's an extra bonus that's fun.
Right. But it promotes each other, right? So you're out playing and then you can review a course and then you can mention Jackpot and you got sponsors and those sponsors want to get their name out. So it kind of feeds in really well to each other, you know?
Yeah. And then, you know, it's also that networking aspect too. Like that's what's great about tournaments is you meet other people that are passionate about the industry as well.
Right.
So you can discover new opportunities there. And I mean, it is very competitive. So you can't rely on the money you're making at a tournament, if you are, as like how to completely, you know, provide for the businesses. It's more of like a supplemental bonus. Like, hey, you're having fun, you've practiced real hard, and then you win some money. Boom! Now you have some extra money to invest back into the business, or just, you know, kind of treat yourself and get some other extras that are, you know, involved with mini golf. That again, return. You know, if I buy another putter or something along those lines, now that's where that money goes towards. I mean, it still is helpful for the business because, you know, I can show that on Mini Golf Reviews. I can have it with me at Jackpot, you know, just continuing to build up the brand. And then, and that's what's great with Jackpot too, is it's all about promotion, not just for Jackpot itself, but for other organizations and businesses too. So I've been able to partner with lots of small businesses because one, it's entertaining and there's nothing else out there like it at this point. But you know, they can give me stuff to promote their businesses too, whether, you know, connect with a bar and they decide to give out coupons for free drinks, or connect with a small business that wants to give out away like bags or cups or things along those right. lines that are, you know, their swag,
right.
but it gives me, you know, free stuff to give away besides my own swag and stuff to hand out in other prizes too. Like
right.
I worked with a brewing company at Terrapin Brewing Company at a Wing Festival I had done, and they had donated two limited edition beers and a Terrapin Brewing Company hammock, which, and then I had, it was around Halloween, so I had a big witch's cauldron full of candy. So not only did you win the money, you got those prizes as well. So really, you know, it adds to the value. So, you know, calculated that it was probably like $200 of extra value added to your prize. And that's what's cool. So other companies, right. you know, they have this stuff, you know, just sometimes sitting in a warehouse, and they're like, well, how do we get this out so it's more effective to reach people? You know,
right.
they just give it away as they're making connections and things like that. But then bam, now you have that, just that one prize that you're giving away, but you're getting in front of all these other people that are a different demographic or
group. Right. Plus they're at a fun event, so they tend
right.
to.
Yeah. And I found that a lot of events that I'm at, you know, people are, they don't have a like a form of entertainment other than shopping or whatever, or eating at the event. So I that's where I come in too. I provide additional entertainment that fits in that space.
Right.
So I make my designs particularly around a 10 by 10 space, because that's typical like booth space at an event. So
got
being
it,
able
right.
to do that, you know, I fit in real well. I'm not like they have to have a special area for me, and it works out quite nicely, because then I just fit in with the event, and then it adds that entertainment that they were missing beforehand.
Yeah.
And especially, even though, you know, it's for all age groups, typically a lot of kids like to play. I mean, it just makes a lot of sense. It's something fun.
Right.
But a lot of those events, like a craft fair or something along those lines, do not have anything geared towards children at all.
Right, very few.
So,
things, yep.
So the kids that are going with their parents or grandparents are particularly bored. So
right.
it allows, you know, them to have something to do, which turns out to be quite nice for the business, because I'm able to get the donations, but then also generate revenue, because most of the time I'm the only attraction for them. So
right.
So it obviously has a significant draw then.
And so you're doing this within your area? Nearby,
yeah, right.
You can't, you know, you're not flying to New Jersey to do these things, obviously.
Well, I'm going to be starting to. So so right now it's just Wisconsin only,
okay.
but I have made different connections, as you know, through social media and events that I've been at, that, you know, they want to hire Jack Butt to be at an event. Like, so I'm going to be doing a celebrity golf outing out in LA in October, as long as,
okay.
you know, the restrictions are
right.
lifted on everything.
Hopefully
but,
by then.
But yeah, so like, so able to get out there. People are interested in hiring me to design like a hole for their backyard or front yard, things like that. So, and that's just because of where I'm at with the business. So I'm able to branch out and do those kind of fun things
right.
too, which is what I've always wanted to do, is, you know, do the design and building.
Sure.
Of
well, you probably could
courses.
Build a miniature golf design company, right?
Yeah. Because I mean, yeah.
Either
I mean,
private or for actual courses that are opening.
Exactly. So, I mean, I eventually want to, you know, continue to expand. I think Jack Putt is the business that would be that company, and continuing to expand in ways that I have expanded that so far is, like, obviously right now with COVID-19, I'm not able to get out and go to these
right,
events.
Obviously.
So I had to be pretty creative on, you know, how to move forward. So, I recently had a connection, with this, pro golfer out in, LA. And she's
okay.
a candidate for Woman of the Year with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society.
Okay.
So when I was talking with her, I said, oh, we'll figure out how to, you know, jackpot how to donate towards her campaign for that. But then all the events and stuff got postponed or canceled. So,
right, unfortunately.
So I started seeing on social media, like, people were designing holes in their homes and things like
right.
that.
Well, if
and
people are creative, right?
Right, yeah. So I wanted to not only just see, like, keep seeing those because I thought those designs are great, but why not have people do that as part of like a contest fundraiser. So
yeah, man, maybe you should do that. Post ideas or have people post ideas about how they're designing their golf holes in their house.
Exactly.
Like a golf hole challenge, you know, for get awareness out for some.
And that's exactly what I did. So I created the, so I created this campaign called Putt for Pledges.
Okay.
And so we got several miniature golfers and just general people and businesses joining in too. So that's going to happen for May 9th. So that's National Miniature Golf Day. People are going to either take pictures or go live on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever platform that they want to to share that information.
Yeah. So listen, your episode won't be out by then.
That's
so
all right.
Make sure
that's
you get me, but get me information and then we'll send out an e-blast and on our social media to promote it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And it's okay that it's not out for this one because this is really the first one. And I intend to do this, you know, continue doing these types of campaigns because, you know, it's something that you can do regardless if there's stay at home orders or not.
Right.
You know, people can still participate in these activities because it's at their home, at, you know, in their yard, whatever they, wherever they want to be for it. And, you know, they build a hole and then they take 10 putts. They raise pledges from friends, family, people they know.
Right.
So right now I'm at $70 a putt. So I've raised $700.
Very nice.
For this so far.
Right.
I think overall our campaign is over $1,200. But as more people get involved, you know, that number is going to go up. I did a local news segment on Friday that's going to be airing this week for it. So that's going to help promote as well. We're working on talking with like PGA tour professionals as well, talking with their agents to get them involved. It might not be until the, you know, the very last minute, but then that's kind of a fun surprise with it as well.
Right.
And then people that participate, they also get stuff just for participating. So they get that light up golf ball that I was talking to you about already. Yeah. They get a Putt for Pledges sticker. They get a Jack Putt drawstring bag to keep everything in. And then they get these cool Putt for Pledges shirts that I had designed that that people are going to get. And that's where sponsors come in too. Sponsors get their logo on the back of the shirt. And now they get some reach as well for the donations that they make. So
when we were talking before we, you know, but when we first met each other, you mentioned that putt-putt golf is different than other kinds of mini golf, right?
Yep. So
what's the difference?
Yeah. So putt-putt, which a lot of people will call miniature golf that just because.
Yeah, I hear it as an interchangeable term.
Right. But the thing is that putt-putt is actually a brand. So it's an organization itself. So putt-putt
like courses, Xerox is to copier, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, or post-it note to sticky note, like
got
that kind
it.
Of thing. So,
yeah.
So yeah, it's a brand, but they're very distinct. It's pretty easy to tell if it's a putt-putt course though, because typically they'll include the name putt-putt as one of the hole designs. Like they'll have it like with rebar bent out, painted, and it'll say putt-putt on one of the holes as one of the obstacles. But also all the holes are meant to have that hole in one possibility. So you might play a bunch of adventure type golf courses nowadays that hole in ones aren't possible on some of these holes. It's just just be insane. Like you'd have to pull a Happy Gilmore and have the earthquake and hit off the moon and
bounce off the elephant into the hole. Yeah.
So like crazy stuff
happen.
Like that.
Yeah.
But putt-putt is generally the hole in one. So
which
opens the door to like skins tournaments and stuff where, you know, you play for money for every hole in one and those kind of things. So
now how many professional golfers are there out there that are playing professional miniature golf?
Yeah, so the United States is kind of more of a smaller base, but it's still quite a bit. There's probably a couple hundred in the United States that play. Europe is particularly more, it's more popular for playing professionally. I mean, they probably have a couple thousand that would be playing. They also have a lot more tournaments. The professional golf community is really looking to have mini golf added into as an Olympic sport even. It is pretty cool. It's just like in European miniature golf, they actually don't have carpet typically on the courses. So it's actually just like a smooth cement slab And so it has different.
The ball must go all over the place.
Yeah, so it has so much more rolling potential. Right. They actually even typically often use different golf balls too, whether it's a rubber ball or a golf ball that we see here in the United States. I mean, some of these people have hundreds of different golf balls that, well, this one bounces this kind of way,
right,
and so on and so on. So there's so many different nuances. And typically in the United States, it's whatever golf ball company you particularly like, the design and look, but there's not too many in regards to different materials and things like that. So,
well, I guess your fourth project as this movement grows could be to open the miniature golf Hall of Fame.
Over a period of time, you can put
the courses in there. Is there a miniature golf Hall of Fame? No.
Well, there kind of is. I've already kind of started that. So that's what's cool with Jackputt. So anytime someone wins the money, I actually have a championship title belt that I let people sign. Become in this prestige. They get a giant check like in the PGA that they get to keep. And I take a picture and put that out on social media, which typically every time that happens, it goes viral.
Right.
At least in my Wisconsin community wise. But it's starting to reach out to more and more people, which is how I'm getting like that additional interest in other areas in the United States as well. But it's pretty cool. They get to pose with the belt, they put it on their shoulder, they have the giant check,
then they become part of
Jackputt's Hall of Fame. And I have a section on my site that's dedicated to those people, and you know, whatever they want to share with me, like they're a part of their story of why they did it, or, you know, what are they going to use the money for? Like that gets added in there, and it's a cool experience for people to do that. And then also they become a professional mini golfer right then and there, because once you start making money at it, you're a professional. So they really enjoy that experience, and they talk about it for a long time. Like I still have several people that I've won that always reach out and say like, man, that was like the coolest thing I ever did. And you know, people always ask about it, and they're like, we can't wait till, you know, the events start rolling again, because we want to check out what you're doing this year and all that. So it's just a lot of really cool stuff.
Well, maybe as it grows, you can license Jackputt in different areas, because you don't have to go there.
Exactly.
The
I mean, I just actually launched over the weekend, having, you know, with COVID-19 and being stay at home, you know, venturing out and checking out podcasts and being a guest, because people have found that my story really is interesting, just because it's so unique. People have been really excited to talk with me and learn more. But
that's how we connected. You reached out to me, so yeah.
Yeah, it's just inspired me to also start my own podcast, connecting with other miniature golfers, but with businesses too. So I bought the domain over the weekend for that, and I'm calling it Par for the Course.
Oh, cool. That's a great name.
With Mr. Mini Golf. So
nice.
And it's not just geared just towards mini golf, but although that's like probably like my feature highlight is
you know,
talking with other miniature golfers, but I'm a huge fan of Shark Tank, How I Built This with Guy Raz on NPR. And then
The Prophet. You ever watch The Prophet?
No, I haven't seen that one. But
that's very good. That's on CNBC.
I think that's what the
Marcus Lemonis. Yeah.
And then also my last favorite one is a show called Startup on PBS, which is hosted by Gary Brado.
And I'll check
all
that
of
one out.
Yeah, all of those are all, and you can, if you download the PBS app, you can watch all those for free. So that's a great.
The NPR ones are good too. Guy Raz is great.
Yeah. So basically, I just love hearing the stories of people.
Yeah.
You know, I love hearing how people get creative and are unique. And but the only critique I have for all of those areas is they really hardly ever focus on when someone fails or, you know, it doesn't work out.
Right.
So those are some of the stories I want to have on mine too. Is like, someone tried something, it didn't work out. Why didn't it work out? Maybe if they're, you know, willing to share that. And then what did they learn from it? Did they?
Right. Well, that's what we do on my podcast. I mean, I constantly talk to people. They failed. Look, if you're going to go and give it a try and run your own business, you're going to fail. It's a question of what you're going to fail at. So
absolutely.
You got to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been plenty of failures that I've had, you know, getting these businesses going. But then also there were successes that I never would have accounted for as well.
Of course.
So you try to be prepared as possible, which is what you should be with anything.
Right.
And that's how, you know, you're going to move forward. And
plus you always learn more when you fail, when you make mistakes, much quicker.
If everything's just going fine, you don't change.
Right.
You don't see the need that you have to make a change in order to do more. So,
all right. So listen, what I want you to do is get me, you know, the links to Jackputt and the mini golf reviews and any of your social pledges. Media links. Yeah, sure. Everything you want to put out, because we'll put it in the show notes. Sure. People can find out how to get a hold of you, how to learn more, and also about the contest. That's coming up, and we'll get that out. And that you know, it's just cool. I'm glad you reached out, because it's a cool topic, you know, learning about what you do and how you really turned it into a business. It was really a hobby, but you're like, I'm going to do this, and you turned it into something. And you're helping people.
Yeah, I mean, I hope to inspire people that, you know, something that they're interested in doing, whether, you know, maybe they're like working like woodworking or something along those lines, and they make something. Yeah, you can make it more than just something that you enjoy to do. If you really love it, it's never working a day in your life. You know, you can sustain your lifestyle with that. You can make it even better. You can help other people, and you know, you can have a lot of fun, and you can leave something that maybe isn't something that you're so interested or passionate about. You just have to, you know, work hard at it and work with it, and
definitely
you can make something happen.
Definitely.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review, and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is a production of Mitchell C. Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.